Good. Okay. So I'm intrigued, since I mentioned this last week, repertory grid. Can we start with that?
Repertory grids also have the precursor for some construction people.
Personal construction?
We couldn't hear you, Mike.
Yep.
Sorry.
Did that end? It's just spontaneously logging off on.
Marty, what was it called?
It was repertory grids and personal construction theory. And without having my notes in front of me now, the basic premise of personal construction theory.
I think it's usually just construct.
Sorry, construct theory?
Yeah. Sorry to correct you on that, but since we do use construction in a different postmodern sense, and Kelly is certainly not postmodern, we better stick with construct. Okay.
Personal construct theory, the way I remember it, basically allows that anybody can form their own construct about the phenomena that they're perceiving at any time, and also reevaluate past phenomena in entirely new constructs. And in some cases, it's a bit of a trial and error iteration of, well, they come up with the construct of an idea of what they're observing, and if they find their interpretation is later invalidated, they might just come up with another idea. So I had the example of a day in the life of a Vancouver cyclist nearly getting hit by a bus. One day you might think the bus drivers are all out to kill cyclists. The next day you might think, well, the bus drivers just don't see the cyclists. So you're just completely reinterpreting the environment as you perceive it completely in isolation. So it's not really a socially developed construct. It's a very personal construct. And what repertory grids does is, the example that I pulled up in my summary is it looks at the commonalities between personal constructs across a whole bunch of individuals. And the way it does that is rather than try and get everybody to agree at the same time about what the phenomena is that they're observing and itemize it on all kinds of dimensions. They present a bunch of phenomena and then get each individual in isolation to compare two or three phenomena against each other and then evaluate how are these two different from each other on one dimension only. And so it creates these bipolar pairs of dimensions, or of pairs of dimensions or triplets of dimensions. So, for example, if we had to use repertory grids to compare all of our perceptions of each other, each of us would be asked in a separate room, say, what do I think of you versus you? How are you similar and how are you different? And that creates this bipolar pair. And then I'd be asked, okay, how are the next three of you different and similar? And then through this, you get as many dimensions as the participants report, so not the researchers report, which completely removes observer bias. So you get as many dimensions as they report times the number of participants. So it gets really big matrix of all kinds of pairs. Then what you do is go back and ask the participants on this list of dimensions that they reported to rank each of the observations or each of the phenomena on, in this case it was an 11-point scale, and that draws out really the relative difference on each of these dimensions. So I might have said, well, you guys are different in skin color, but then you guys are really different in skin color. And that's where it really draws out the magnitude of the difference rather than saying that it is different. And then they go through a large quantitative cluster analysis type of research in order to draw out how are each of our multiple accounts of multiple phenomena similar or different, and can they be grouped into similar clusters? And are these clusters common constructs that we all have? So It sounds incredibly convoluted. It's supposed to, if you read through the example, it looks pretty straightforward to do, but reports have indicated that it is pretty difficult to do. But it basically draws out what your personal construct is of multiple phenomena to see if you have, to see if a large population have shared constructs.
I was trying to see if I brought yeah, that was pretty good. I think you can simplify it a bit more if you think of it only on what it was really essentially for, which is at the personal level rather than a more comparative level. Mm-hmm. It gets used for that. But if you could think for a minute, each of you, if you just take a second, to think of three important people in your life. Okay? So just write down the names of three important people in your life. Okay. And include yourself too, all right? So.
Well, that'd be a fourth?
Yeah, as a fourth. Okay. So what you would start off with is you would pick three of the people, okay, on your list. You've got four people altogether, so pick three. And think, it's an odd one out exercise. So think about a way in which two of the people you picked are similar but different from the third. Okay? You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Anything
yeah,
at all?
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Okay? So you could say, well, these two I picked have a good sense of humor, this one's very serious. Or these two I picked are both related to each other, this one isn't. Okay, whatever. But the more, obviously, the more, the less, what you try to encourage people to do is to do this at a less descriptive layer of just, you're not interested really that they both wear jeans and the other one doesn't, or that they both have blue eyes, and right? You're trying to get at characteristics of the person, what you might think of as features of their character. Okay? And then pick another three. And you repeat the same thing. How are another three people? Where two in that combination, what do two in that combination of three have that is similar about each other but different from the third?
Almost on the same dimension?
No, nope, it could be, well, now it's going to be three different people, so maybe it's a different thing altogether.
What's that grid?
Let's say you've got yourself included.
The way I interpret your instructions, I've got my brother, my sister, one of my best friends, and myself. Mm-hmm. And so I picked sibling as one of the dimensions, compared three people. So my brother and my sister are siblings, mm-hmm. and my best friend is definitely not a sibling.
Right.
Then on gender, rather than doing that same dimension across different triplets, I picked gender. My brother and I are definitely the same gender, my sister is not. But I could use that same gender comparison across different triplets. So my sister and one of my best friends are both girls, and my brother is not.
Okay.
Similarly, my brother and I are both guys, and my sister is not.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what you would do, though, is I would be encouraging you to be picking constructs now that are more about character. Okay.
And not as binary as gender.
So would you do that sort of thing where you would predetermine what you're comparing them on, or would you?
No, you see, that was the point. You see, that's why I didn't want you to work down your thinking of your comparative categories, but rather think of the people. So you're working at the level of the people. So what you would do is you did the first one, right? You've got your brother, your
brother, my sister, best friend,
and your friend. Okay, so just take your brother, your sister, and your friend, and try to think of two ways that is not just a descriptive way. Okay, so two ways about something about your brother and your sister and your friend that you're to two of them share in common, but is different from the third.
That's something that doesn't come down to a binary variable.
Yes.
So I put that two people are optimistic, more optimistic than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Another one I put was two different people were more easygoing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's the idea. So those become your constructs then. Okay, those terms, easygoing, optimistic. And the reason they're personal constructs is because you thought of them, right? They came from you, and they're ways that you would use when thinking about those individuals in your life, right? They're not imposed by a researcher to say how optimistic is your brother, or, you know, it's a word you came up with, you think of. It's part of your personal world of description or thinking about people, okay? So you would come up with a set of those. And then it's on that, and using your own constructs, you would then rate those constructs, okay? Usually they're used then to rate aspects of yourself. That's often how it's done. You use those own constructs to look at how you, where you see yourself, okay, in relation to those very same things. So they're valuing things. They're things that matter to you, important enough to you that you thought of them, and they're not researching it yet. Does that help? This has started off, of course, as a lot of things in qualitative research, and again, the narrative we're doing that as an, or the, sorry, life story we're doing that as an example next week, which comes from more psychoanalytic, but this came from Kelly's research and very much used in counseling and in therapy to help, you know, as a technique to help people explore their personal worlds, okay? What kinds of things do they draw on to make sense of their personal worlds?
Can you say Kelly's work? Is there another name?
George Kelly.
1955. That's pretty recent.
That's the guy. Yeah. Yeah, and the and this Bannister and Francella, who I put down on the reference sheet, they really took the theoretical notions of Kelly's personal construct and turned it into this rep grid, if you like, method. And then it's been developed. There's a part of RepGrid now that's called laddering, which is another. Did you come across that technique on
top?
Just a
brief mention of it.
Which is the way you then take those constructs and apply them in different ways, laddering the information. There's one study I remember reading by someone called Honess, H-O-N-E-S-S, which was they used RepGrid technique to look at children's perceptions of, I can't remember what it was, maybe other children in the school of difference or something, and other children in the school, and it was, they used that laddering technique, and it was a nice study that was published using it, but it's not really, really popular in terms of seeing a lot of research that's used this. What I guess I would say stands out for me that I like about it is, again, the idea that researchers don't predefine the categories that people then rate, right, is that people are coming up with their own ways that they think about certain things, and then using those ways as a, you know, to explore other dimensions of self or identity. So hence it falls very much into the phenomenological. Did you have more?
No, that's pretty much it. Like the highlights were that it completely removes the observer bias. But as you increase the number of dimensions and participants, it becomes very computationally intensive. And after you've plotted this all out, then you go back to each observer and ask them to rank each of their phenomena by each of these dimensions on the scale of 1 to 11, and that gets really, really time-consuming.
I have some lovely photos. You can always see if you look at Jonathan Smith's work with Claire, the pregnant woman that I told you about last week. And what he did, in addition to interviewing her, he did personal construct grids, the repertory grids with her. And so he was able to, through this cluster analysis, they come out with these lovely diagrams where you can see things like, would look something like this, where this might be her mother, her father, and her husband. And so it would show, there might have been, but it was just on that triangle alone, let's say, it goes like this, okay? It would show the grid might show that there was a strong level of agreement between, you know, her perceptions at the time between mother and father and husband. But maybe not between husband and mother. That's Claire, a strong one between mother and Claire. I didn't draw them, but you know how you get this kind of analysis, right? Running through where people, and what, through showing how, so I should have done a different dimension here. It should have been more like square, right? Like this. Claire, mom, father, husband. And then based on how they're linking up, whether there's a sense of agreement or conflict, these cluster on all the dimensions. And what he showed was over time, so this might have been what
it looked at when she was first pregnant, or before, when she was first, first found out she was pregnant, so say at, you know, something like 4 weeks, and then at, you know, 4 months of pregnancy, suddenly there's maybe a much, or here, let's say, might look like this. In fact, in Claire's story, there was a really strong shift between the way it was less of a link to her mother in particular, I remember. No, then later in the pregnancy, she started to identify more as herself as a mother. She started to identify more with her own mother. And therefore, the she saw more similarities between herself and her mother. And that came out in this technique. Right? So it just showed that how fluid the sense of identity, sense of self was in this case. Make sense? It's hard to describe without the real study frame, but that was how he was using it in that perspective. So for me, it makes a lot of sense to see it as a very much a case study, looking at the individual, and then to go and compare cases, as you described, it is a much more complex. And there are computer programs available to actually do repertory grid. The computer will do all the analysis and draw those pretty diagrams. Any other questions?
Complete. Just another technique. Kelly was very much interested in that notion of identity, getting at identity and who we are, and that we have our own ways in which our own phenomenal world. So very much the insider idea of identity.
I guess if you have questions, I hope the journal article that I added in explains a lot more. It's a pretty easy read.
Good.
Meant for management scholars who don't like using big words.
Man, so using rep grid and management.